So welcome all to the November meeting of the Ottawa PC News Group. If we have any guests with us tonight, we welcome guests at any time to meetings of the Ottawa PC News Group. I'm going to go ahead and mute all right now, and you will not be able to unmute yourself except for Brett. You will be able to unmute yourself now. And I don't think we have any other general announcements, so I think I'll lead right off with the introduction of our guest speaker tonight. And it's my pleasure to introduce Brett Martinson. And Brett studied physics at UBC and earned his MSc at Queen's. And while doing that, he was doing artificial intelligence research as a hobby. And in 2002, he founded Adaptron Incorporated to continue the research in artificial general intelligence research. So tonight, Brett will give us a clearer picture of what AI is, what it could do, and what will be left for us to do. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Brett. You can take it away.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Chris. I will share my second monitor here and get the presentation up and running there.
Perfect.
Just getting rid of that stuff at the top as best one can. This meeting is being recorded. Okay. And there, we're good to go. Yeah, so artificial intelligence, big subject. I'll try and do it justice as best I can. I'll try and give you an overview, describe the good, the bad, and the ugly about artificial intelligence, but I'll try and avoid too much technology because not necessarily everyone here is technical oriented. But feel free to ask technical questions if you want to, but don't expect me to be able to answer them. I don't know everything. So let's get underway here. So, they say a good presentation should always start with a little bit of humor. So here we go. Bob's a bit of a pioneer in artificial intelligence. He's been pretending to know more than he does for years. All right. Why doesn't my page down key work? Numlock, maybe. Numlock, page down. Nope.
Okay. Or usually it's the wrong window has the focus.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, you could use my mouse. So, AI for beginners. Yeah, pretty simple. Look at that. That's pretty easy to learn, isn't it? Yeah, it's been around a long time, and a lot of people have invented all sorts of algorithms and techniques, and a lot of mathematicians are getting involved in AI. So it's a non-trivial subject, however, has showed some serious successes in many different areas. So let's have a little history just to get underway here. Where did it start? How's it evolved over time? Back in 1956, the big thing was good old-fashioned artificial intelligence, it was called. It was what's called symbolic logic. In fact, it proved quite successful in playing checkers, and there was a very successful program called the General Problem Solver. So all of a sudden, yep, this was going to work, and people were very optimistic that they're going to have really intelligent computers within, 20 years or so. That's also when the neural network started becoming a research subject as well. But it went through a real AI winter from 74 to 80. People did very little research in the subject area until Expert Systems came out in the 1980. And then that sort of took off for a while, went through another AI winter until about late 1990s. And then neural networks, all of a sudden, people started saying, neural networks can actually do this stuff. And that's also another algorithm that came out at the same point. It was called evolutionary algorithms. And the big thing in 2002 was finally IBM showing how they could use neural networks and AI algorithms to beat humans at chess. That was a big event. They'd done checkers back in the 1960s, 1970s, but here it was beating humans at chess. That was a big milestone. So all of a sudden, neural nets were important. And they evolved until about 2011, where deep learning versions of these neural networks came out. That was many layers deep and did a lot more abstraction of the information coming into it. It proved very successful for recognizing objects, faces, voices, etc. And the big milestone there was when a company called DeepMind built AlphaGo, a very deep learning neural network that actually beat the Japanese world champion at Go. And people had said AI and computers will never be able to beat humans at Go because it was such a very complicated game when you start looking at the the structure of the game and all the different decisions that could be made at any particular point in the process of the game. So, but there it is. It was beaten 2016. And then, of course, big data and data analysis became the thing to do. Until just recently, this whole concept of large language models, or what's really called generative AI, has really hit the world stage. There's a whole new wave of artificial intelligence based on this new technique. And of course, you probably all heard about ChatGPT. That's the one that really got the most publicity when it came out in November 2022. And a lot of this presentation will be about what's going on with generative AI, the good, the bad, and the not so good. But at the end, we're going to say, well, what's coming in the future? What seems to be gathering momentum right now is robotics. So we're going to talk about robotics at the end as well, as maybe the trend that you'll see taking place over the next 5 years, maybe by the end of this decade. Robotics will be the big thing, and this generative AI stuff will be not so popular. So this is sort of a past, present, and future look at things. But what about the people? The people involved in AI, the pioneers of AI, these people are all dead. They're great individuals, lots of papers written and books, etc. And you might have all heard about Alan Turing. He was back in the 1950s. He came up with that very famous Turing test, where you have to try and figure out whether the person or computer behind the, maybe in another room, communicating to you via typewriters or via computers, is a artificial intelligence software or is it a real person? That's called the Turing test. It's a reasonable test of ability for a chat bot to simulate humans, but it's not a real good test of whether something is truly intelligent. Alan Newell, Sanger, all very famous people. You might have heard of Marvin Minsky. He's all on the list there as well. What about today's people? Well, today's people, these are the big names right now in AI. Fourth from the top, Geoffrey Hinton. You've probably heard of him, University of Toronto. That's because he just won the Nobel Prize for artificial intelligence work that he's been doing over the years. The one above him, Gary Marcus. Now, Gary Marcus is an interesting character. He's been doing AI for years and years in cognitive science, and he's a big critic. He likes to poke holes in what AI can't do. In that respect, he's a very valuable individual because he points out these are the areas which need to be worked on much more. So I appreciate reading stuff that he produces. Another person on the list is Rodney Brooks. You might have heard of him, a founder of a company called iRobot, and you've heard of the Romba vacuum cleaner robot. Well, that's one of the things that came out of that company. Jan LeCun is also very well known, and Yoshi Bengio. There's our Canadian AI superstar from the University of Montreal, very well known. In fact, you might say that the three musketeers are Yoshi Bengio, Jan LeCun, second from the bottom, and Geoffrey Hinton. They tend to be the three well-known people in the area of AI. So those are today's people that you'll find in the press. What about companies and groups? Well, of course, there's all the big companies, Amazon, Apple, Google, Meta, Microsoft. They all have their AI applications. It could be Siri, for instance, in Apple. Amazon has a large language model company that they fund called Anthropic. It has a Claude, which is a large language model. And, of course, DeepMind. Google purchased DeepMind. DeepMind started off in the UK and has some really good success stories. I'll go through them at one point in the presentation. And they have, as a large language model, currently is Gemini. Meta has the Llama model, and of course OpenAI, which is funded large funding from Microsoft, has the ChatGPT. So those are some examples of some of the companies and some of the products that you've probably heard of. What's happening in Canada? Well, Canada has an AI research group called the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. It's a pan-Canadian artificial intelligence strategy. That's what they set up. They put that in place. So that tries to bring together all the AI companies and institutes and universities within Canada, but specifically within Montreal, Toronto, out in Alberta, there's three institutes that bring together universities and companies to work together on artificial intelligence. And it's called MILA in Montreal, it's called Vector in Toronto, and it's called AIMI out in Alberta. So there's lots of stuff going on in Canada in AI. Stuff going on in self-driving cars. The company called Qnix right here in Ottawa, doing stuff in building software for self-driving cars. So lots of stuff in Canada, which is good to see. But what about the AI technology? So that is a list of algorithms that have been invented over the years. I'm going to test you at the end of the presentation. I'm going to give you questions on each one of these. And, of course, you're going to memorize all of these, aren't you? Yeah, right. It's been around so many years, since the 1950s, that a lot of different techniques and algorithms have been invented. A lot of them are very mathematically oriented. It seems that AI researchers tend to gravitate towards using mathematics and equations and probabilities and stochastical algorithms in their research. There are a few algorithms there and techniques that are not don't use probabilities or stochastic algorithms, but a lot of them tend to. And I have no intention of explaining all those to you. But if you have a specific question, I'll do my best at giving you a feel for how it's designed or how it kind of works. That's not what we're here for. We're here to talk about AI in more general terms. All of the AI techniques you've just seen and all the AI software that's ever existed is narrow AI. Now, what is narrow AI? Well, it is specific for a certain domain or application. You know, Siri, for instance, can answer questions and do things like that, but it can't drive a car. Chess software can't drive a car, and self-driving car software can't play chess. These are application or domain-specific software. Yet large language models, well, they're not so domain-specific, but they're very specific just to text. For instance, they take text in and they can generate text in the form of sentences. But you try and get them to play chess. When ChatGPT was first to try and get it to play chess, 16% of the moves it made in playing chess were invalid chess moves. You know, it'd move a knight to a location which it couldn't move it to. So it didn't have any concept of how to play chess. But it made beautiful sentences. So this is narrow AI. And there's some other significant deficiencies with AI as it's currently developed and is used. The next one down there is trained on large quantities of data. It needs lots of text or lots of speech and music or lots of images or lots of numbers, whatever. You know, it's data hungry, you might say. And one of the reasons it's data hungry is because of the mathematics and the way the neural networks work, very mathematical. They have lots of connections between all the nodes in the network. And all these connections are called links. And on those links, there's a number. And all those numbers are calculated using probability equations. So they're called parameters. And the biggest large language models right now have on the order of 20 to 50 billion links, and therefore 20 to 50 billion parameters. And when you train this thing, it has to modify all those values that are relevant to the subject that particular part of the network is being fine-tuned on. So they need lots and lots of training and lots of data. However, once you've trained them, you start using them. Once you start using them, they don't learn anything new. They're really sort of frozen in time after their training. They stop learning. So ChatGPT, when it first came out, was trained up to the data from about the end of 2022. So in 2023, if you were asking it a question, something that happened the previous month, it couldn't answer it because it didn't have it in its training set. So you've got some serious constraints based on the fact you have to train it and then you deploy it. And it doesn't learn anything new. And the other significant problem is the opacity or the opaqueness of the neural network. All those billions of links, all those probabilities, and how it goes about coming up with its answers and decisions, you cannot figure out how it does it. It's just so complicated, it's not transparent, and it cannot explain itself as to how it came up with a decision. So these are serious challenges when it comes to current AI in the industry. And, of course, people are trying to solve these things. What's the opposite to narrow AI? General purpose artificial intelligence, or general AI, sometimes called strong AI, whereas narrow AI is sometimes called weak AI. So artificial general intelligence is the ultimate AI application for general purpose AI. It's something that you could theoretically embed inside a robot, connect up the AI, artificial general intelligence software, to the robot's sensors and the robot's action devices, wheels or motors or pumps or speakers. Sensing devices might be, video cameras, microphones, pressure sensors, gyroscopes, anything they could sense. And then that artificial general intelligence theoretically should learn how to control that robot by perceiving what comes in on the sensors, thinking about it, recording it, acting using its action devices, and learning how to behave, and ultimately learning how to think. That becomes true artificial general intelligence. It really understands reality. It's in touch with reality. It's aware of what's going on. It learns from interacting with reality, and supposedly that results in common sense. Another thing about general purpose AI, it should learn continuously. You don't train it and then deploy it. It continues to learn and add knowledge to its long-term memory. And ideally, you want it to be transparent. You want it to be explainable. You want to be able to ask it. Or if you can't ask it because it hasn't learned how to speak English yet or communicate via text, because it might start out like a baby, at least you should be able to sort of open up its brain and have a look inside and say, oh, yeah, this is, I can see the logic that it used to come up with a particular decision. But
Brett, yeah. I have a question that's probably relevant right here, and yeah, that's from Alan. It's, he said, is any work being carried on incorporating both training and use in an LLM? In this one, you have general AI where it will learn continuously. Is there not any progress being made in the large language model world of ChatGPTs and things like that where it will continuously learn and it's not going to be a static where it stops learning?
No, that's the answer. No, it's based on the fact you train it and then you have to deploy it. But we'll talk about prompting. We'll talk about prompting. Prompting is a workaround to try and solve that problem. The idea being that when you go to ask, before you go to, or part of the process of asking a question, you give it a whole pile of new information. So you give it the latest information on the subject you're interested in, and then you ask a question. Well, it uses all that information you give it to correlate it with what's in its large language model and comes up with better answers as a result. But it doesn't add all that new information that you put into the prompt and modify its large language model. It's what it's been trained on.
Okay.
So that comes from GPT. GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer.
Right.
Okay? Pre-trained. So that's a key, you know, that's the P of GPT. So people are working on trying to come up with continuously learning AI applications, but not based on the large language model. The technology is called transformers, not based on the transformer architecture or the transformer techniques. There are other people working on that kind of, you know, continuously learning. But, you know, people who are working on continuous learning often don't try and also maximize transparency and explainability. Okay? Well, they might work on continuously learning, but they don't necessarily have their AI attached to real sensors and real actuators in the real world. Excuse me.
So I guess a comment here that we have from Art Hunter is, I think that means that you have to update the LLM from time to time to keep it current. So I guess that's when ChatGPT went from 3.5 to 4 and things like that. It was a whole new data set.
That's right. They did a whole new retraining on the latest versions of the information they could get off the internet.
Right.
Exactly what's going on. Yeah. Good. So this is a key distinction, narrow AI versus general AI, and that'll come up again in the later on as well. Okay, what I want to do is talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of AI, okay? And we'll talk about it in general terms, and then we'll talk about specifically about the good, bad, and the ugly of generative AI and large language models, because there's some interesting stuff going on, and lots of problems, but lots of people trying to solve those problems. Okay, so the good, the bad, and the ugly of AI. What's the good? Well, the good is phenomenal. It's lots of great applications for AI technology, and it's proving to be very, very beneficial for mankind. Absolutely. Lots and lots of good applications, being quite successful, not replacing people, but certainly being good assistance to people. It's bad, though. It does not all work properly. But, of course, that gives us an opportunity to do more research. Lots of people trying to fix it and improve AI techniques. And that's why you got that long list of AI techniques. The ugly? Well, misinformation, fake news, all that stuff. You know, that's terrible stuff going on. Crime, where people are using AI for criminal purposes. And even worse, the military starting to use AI. That's scary kind of stuff. Another one, which is unemployment. It's another one. You have to decide, though, is that bad or is that just ugly? Maybe somewhere in between. We can discuss that as well. So let's do the good, the bad, and the ugly of AI. And starting with the good, there are so many ways that AI can be good and applied that I've got, I don't know, 6 slides on it. I'm not going to stop on every one of these. I may stop on one or two of them just to articulate on them. But healthcare, for instance, just phenomenal possibilities in healthcare. Google recently came out with a product called AMI, Articulated Medical Intelligence Explorer, which aids doctors to diagnose problems. There's great stuff going on with Google DeepMind in the alpha series of software. I'll talk to that in a few minutes. But, you know, anything that helps radiologists look at x-rays, for instance, look for where cancers are, that sort of stuff. Tremendous stuff going on in that area in recognizing cancers, et cetera. Education is a natural place for AI to be used. Chatbots, you've learned all about, you've seen chatbots. Cybersecurity, great advantages using AI and cybersecurity. Because, you know, in cybersecurity, you want to recognize the normal things that go on in your organization, on your internet or your local network inside your company. You want to be able to say, these are all normal behavior. And then somehow you want to be able to say, the strange thing that happened at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's never happened before. It must be, this is worth investigating. So you have AI software recognizing the patterns of activity on the network in your business. And anything that's sort of out of the ordinary, the AI software can flag it. And then you can get a person to look more closely at those kinds of things. And so cybersecurity and use of AI in that purpose is very valuable. Of course, we already have that kind of thing happening with phishing emails and that sort of thing. In fact, I have Rogers sometimes when my phone calls come through on my phone here, I have a landline and it comes up with a message, likely spam. So they're already, you know, starting to do that kind of thing. Financial auditing, yes, there's been AI software in that area. And of course, chatbots, that's natural. Video games. Well, video games have been using AI for many, many years in their non-player characters. They're all simulated beings, and they've been incorporating AI into those things. Speech recognition, synthesis has been around for some time, luggage scanning, natural language processing, knowledge and reasoning. Now, there's psych. Psych has been around, I think, probably the late 1960s, and that's a big, huge, you could call it a database, but it's a really big knowledge base. It's not based on large language models. It's based on what's called rule-based knowledge. And they've been building it up and adding in more and more information to that. So it's I wouldn't say quite reasoning, but it certainly can make some common sense decisions or common sense recommendations. Manufacturing, agriculture is using AI for guiding tractors across the fields and that sort of thing. And of course, planting crops and when you should harvest your crops, etc. Building security, monitoring video cameras or monitoring access cards, people coming in, you know, again at midnight using their access card. Why is that person using their access card at midnight? They usually come in only from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock of the day. So anything like that, just like cybersecurity, AI software can flag those things and say this is unusual. Meteorology, there's something that's happening. Just this year I saw an article how using some of these new neural networks, they've been able to extend weather predictions by at least a day and increase the accuracy. So that is a bit very beneficial. The smart transit, smart city, risk assess, AI boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, people that are looking for companionship, that sort of thing AI can be used for. Controlling chemical processing, intelligent houses is a great application for AI. Now, self-driving vehicles, obviously, you know, you've probably more than familiar with Teslas and those things, and General Motors with their Cruise. Two of the companies that are now starting to show real advances in self-driving vehicles is Waymo, which is a US-based company, and Wayve, which is a UK-based company, really doing great stuff when it comes to self-driving cars. This Emma software there for Waymo, what they've done is they've taken the sensory information from a self-driving vehicle, fed it into a large language model, and then taken the large language model, which generates the results, and take those results to do the braking and the steering and the acceleration, etc. So it's based on large language models in the middle with car or vehicle information coming in and vehicle control information coming out. Rather an innovative approach. People are also trying to use the same approach, large language models, for controlling robots. Very experimental, but when we get into the problems with large language models, or generative AI as it's called, you'll start to say, should they be using this for controlling cars and robots? Is it going to really solve the, you know, is it going to be more intelligent than the previous software that was developed by Tesla and General Motors Cruise? So there's a big question there. What about autonomous parcel delivery? That's taking off more and more down the States that I've seen articles on. Biotechnology, drug development and screening. Eli Lilly's into that, using AI for that purpose. Great benefit there to humanity. What else we got? Well, a whole pile of stuff. Inventing new compounds, solving complex mathematical problems, journalism, good support there for, you know, certainly for someone who's getting into journalism and wants to give a draft version of their article. But don't expect it to generate an article that is, you know, perfect at the start. It'll be a good first draft from large language models. Architectural help, there's a thing called Promo AI, learning English, ELSA, creating videos. Now have AI software that generates video, short videos, and translation. Of course, there's lots of translation going. Google's got Translate on the internet. And then of robots. We're going to talk about robots. But what I'd like to highlight is the successes that Google DeepMind has had over the last, about 10 years. I told you about AlphaGo and how successful that was. Then they came out with AlphaStar, which actually played StarCraft, which is a video game, and played it better than the human players could play this StarCraft game. So really proved a very successful. I would like to emphasize their work in AlphaFold and AlphaProteo. AlphaFold was heralded as a real success worldwide. You know, before AlphaFold came out, people that were working in the area of the atomic structure for proteins, they had taken about 100,000 proteins, and they had actually figured out the atomic structure of them, because the atomic structure of proteins is very important, because proteins, they bind with other molecules that might be on the side of a virus, for instance, or they do work and modify other chemicals. They'd worked out this atomic structure of about 100,000. And when AlphaFold came out and it was fed the information from those 100,000 proteins that were known, it then successfully generated up to 200 million known proteins, the actual physical structure of them. It was a tremendous success in the area of biology and biological research. AlphaCode, software programming, not as good as a well-experienced programmer, but you can generate code from software, using software to generate code. It generates reasonable code. Alpha Geometry came out this year. It successfully solved some very, very complicated geometric problems that really only experienced mathematicians were able to solve. And then Alpha Proteo came out just very recently. It's all about protein design. So you give it a chemical with a certain structure, and you say, I want a protein that will bind with that chemical. And AlphaProteo will give you the design of those proteins, and then from there it will reverse engineer and say, this is the DNA that will generate the protein that will bind with the whatever you need the protein to bind with. So really some successful stuff here. And this is just, tip of the iceberg of places where, you know, AI can be beneficial. So there's a lot of good possibilities in the field of AI. Of course, it brings us to generative AI. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it ugly? Well, there it is. Real simple stuff, generative AI, large language models, and using transformer technology. Transformer algorithms or techniques. So just memorize that, and I won't have to explain any more to you. generative AI technology. Of course, you all heard large language models is the buzzword you tend to hear about. It's text based. It learns how to interpret. Let's say it's fed a lot of text. It starts recognizing textual patterns, and then you can ask it questions, and it'll generate textual answers. So that's why you end up with the name ChatGPT. It's generative, pre-trained, transformer being the technique or technology. So how does it work? I'm not expecting to explain it in a lot of detail. It uses this transformer AI technique. It's made up of a neural network with billions of links between words, and I mean billions, on the orders of 20 to 50 billion. And each one of those links has a number on it, and that's all the probabilities of the – why is it probabilities? Well, what it uses those probabilities on those links to predict what the next word is – sorry, what the best word is in the sentence that it's generating. So if you, for instance, ask it to complete the sentence, the cat sat on the – well, it might come up with mat. The cat sat on the mat. It might say the cat sat on the chair, the cat sat on the sofa, the cat sat on the roof, the cat sat on the – well, it wouldn't come up with the cat sat on the grape or the apple or the banana, because those are very low frequency occurring. It may have never occurred in any sentence in the English language, in any of the books, in any of the – on the internet. So what it does is it comes up with a probability of the next word in a sentence. Not just the next word, though, beside it. It'll come up with the probability of the word that's four words away, the probability of the word that's five words away, the probability of the word that's six words away, et cetera, et cetera. So once you give it a piece of the sentence, or you have a question which has some nouns and verbs in it, it will go to its database or its large language model, and it'll come up with the answer which has the best probability of being the right combination of words to give you an answer. It comes out with eloquent, believable sentences. And you say, wow, this is really intelligent, knows what it's talking about. No, it doesn't know what it's talking about. It's just generating the next most probable word in a sentence to answer your question. And you have to prompt it with information and a question. They start out with prompts that you give it like 10,000 words in the prompt. You could sort of explain the subject you wanted to ask the question about. And then you'd ask the question. Well, you use those 10,000 words and match them up with the information in the large language model, and then use that to come up with the result. They then realize that they need to have bigger prompts. So now you can actually feed it a prompt that is as big as a book. You could feed it, you know, a million words in the prompt and really narrow down the subject that you want to investigate. So it's obviously coming up with better answers as a result of that. But it still has its problems, and we're going to talk about those. So that's sort of an inkling as to how this thing works. There's Gary Marcus. He calls it a stochastic parrot, a parrot that repeats back to you and does it stochastically, which is based on probability. That was one of his terms he came up with. So large language models, lots of companies working in large language. There's some products down the left-hand side. There's the companies that develop them on the right-hand side. There's ChatGPT there with OpenAI. Gemini is the name of the large language model that Google has as a product. It actually is available in 40 different languages, which is phenomenal. Gatto is DeepMind's version. Llama is the large language model Meta AI from Meta, Facebook. And Microsoft has one as well. But Microsoft is actually using the one from OpenAI as well, the ChatGPT one. So that gives you a feeling of companies. What about usage? Of all the AI products that are out of there, this is actually data from earlier this year. The data showed that about 50% of the usages of AI products was actually ChatGPT, then Bing AI, et cetera, and less frequently used ones down towards the bottom. But interestingly, on that list, there are a number to do with education. Brainy and Course Hero being used for homework help and textbook and tutoring. Well, if students can start using large language models to produce the essays and results from their assignments, teachers need to be able to detect whether they've generated their answer or their essay using AI products. So there's another tool, second from the bottom there, Turnitin, which detects AI and students' homework. So you know, AI detecting AI. So that's just sort of gives you a feel for generally public usage of AI. But it's not just text in and text out in these large language models. You can now feed images into your large language model. So it's images into text. There's a transition there. And then the text can be generated back into images and you get image out. The extra technology that's put on the front end and the back end of the large language model, which sits in the middle, is the technology or the technique is called diffusion. And you can see the stable diffusion is one of the products there. DALL-E is a well-known one. Midjourney is another one. Imagine. These are names of these image generators, generative AI products. You can also get ones that will do speech in and speech out. You can get ones that do videos in and videos out. Now, the video clips that these ones produce, like Sora, I've got a video clip from Sora that I'll show you. They tend to be fairly short, maybe up to a minute at maximum, the video clip. After a while, they just become, they go off the rails, so to speak. But people are working on generating entire movies from this kind of technology. And you can see why the the actors in California were up in arms. I think it was earlier this year, real early this year, where they were striking because they didn't want AI to be used to generate videos or full movies, especially if you consider how tempting it would be for these studios to do this, especially if an actor has died and you then want to reuse that actor's image in a movie. It'd be very tempting for the movie industry to do exactly that. And I bet you they're working on it. I haven't read much about that recently. So the key message here is language alone is not an indication of intelligence. These large language models, the sentences that they generate are beautiful. They're eloquent. They're readable. They seem to make sense. And because of that, you think, oh, well, this software is intelligent. Well, no, all it's doing is rearranging words based on probability of occurrence of the next word in the sentence. You tell me, is that intelligence as you understand it? I don't think so. Intelligence requires a whole pile more to it. There's the body intelligence, emotional intelligence, the linguistic, naturally. That's language. But there's logical, mathematical intelligence, there's musical intelligence, social intelligence, visual, spatial intelligence. Intelligence is a lot more than just language alone. So don't expect to judge something as being intelligent just based on the language that it uses. That's the key message. What about the good, the bad, and the ugly, then, of these generative AI large language technology? Well, here we go. This is great. AI turns this single bullet point into a long email, and I can pretend that I wrote it, and I'm going to send it to my friend. And here's my friend saying, AI makes a single bullet point out of this long email. I can pretend I read it. So that's text generation. What about image generation? You'd be hard-pressed if you weren't told which one of those two images was fake and which one was real. Well, that so happens that the one on the left is actually generated by Midjourney. The one on the right is a real photograph. So these visual image generating software is actually very powerful and very successful. but that can lead into a lot of fake, possibilities for fake images. And that we'll talk about that when we get to some of the not-so-good things about AI. So what about video generation? Well, the product that I mentioned was Sora. Here's an example of some video generated with Sora. Now, there's the prompt at the bottom that was used, fed into the large language model to generate the very short movie. The camera directly faces colorful buildings in Burano, Italy. An adorable Dalmatian looks through a window on a building on the ground floor, and many more sentences in the text. But let's see what it actually generated. you'd swear that was real. Like that was pretty well perfect. You could you'd have to play that, 10 times to find out some places where it doesn't seem to quite correspond to reality. That's the sort of quality that these products can generate, and that's using large language models for the prompt and generating the images using what's called diffusion technology or techniques. So there's lots of good stuff taking place and very applicable. Yeah, we've seen that one. So it's all in the prompting. You have to provide the context information, and then you ask the question. And as I was saying, these prompts can be voluminous before you start asking the question. But what if you want to try and get this large language to do some reasoning? Because they really can't reason. They can't. They don't really think. They don't think through a series of concepts and ideas, and then, so there's a thing called reinforcement learning from human feedback. So it's done through what's called a chain of thought prompting. So you give it some information, you ask a question, and then you continue on that same theme and you ask it another question, or you give it some more information and then ask another question. So you're actually leading it through the reasoning process. It doesn't really do any reasoning, but it feels like it does actually help you reason. So that is the best that they've come up with respect to trying to get large language models to think, if you want to, real thinking and real reasoning that people can perform. Okay. So there's a lot of hype. I don't know if this is the good or the bad when it comes to large language models or generative AI. That's a feel for some of the money that was invested in 2023. In companies working on large language models. Like, they're talking about billions of dollars. If you start looking at where the money comes from and where it goes to, the big companies on the left are investing billions of dollars in the companies on the right. And the companies on the right are mostly doing this large language model, generative AI research and trying to come up with the products. DeepMind does more than just large language models, but most of the other ones are pure large language kind of applications. Lots of money. What about how much? Well, there's the graph that I was able to pick up, I think it was January this year, up to $30,000, $30 billion invested in companies using large language models, developing large language model technology. What about in 2024? Well, I was able to find another graph. This one here, venture capital invested in large language or AI in general, global funding. The last two columns there are 2024, first two quarters of this year, and it adds up to about 25 plus about 10, so about $35 billion just in the first half of this year. Now, what's happening? Well, actually, I've heard and read a number of articles that are saying, okay, venture capital is slowing down. Venture capital have realized that maybe there's not as much profit to be made. They're putting all this billions and billions, and this is real billions of dollars. There's not such a big profit. The potential possibilities for return on investments are not looking so good. So supposedly it's slowing down. Why is it slowing down? Well, there's some problems. And let's look at some of these generative AI problems, the bad. It's grounded on text. It's grounded on sounds. It's grounded on images, it's grounded on videos, but all of that text, sound, images, and videos have been generated by people. It's not in touch with reality. It hasn't obtained that information directly via the world. It's not embodied in a physical entity. So any of the biases that come through on text, let's say it's doing all the text off the internet, it's going to naturally acquire those biases from the text that's on the internet, or whatever's been on the images that's been given. And we'll see some interesting examples of that when we get to what's called hallucination. Doesn't understand what it's writing. It actually generates misinformation because it's just looking at the probability of the words. It puts in words which are not, that don't make sense. So it actually can generate misinformation on the order of about 5% of the time. It'll have sentences which just are not correct. And it doesn't care what it says. It's not aware of what it says. It's just throwing out the words in the right order. So, and usually 95% of the time, yeah, it's in the right order. It's been, it's based on what it's been trained on. But it doesn't understand, and that's what it is. It doesn't really understand like humans understand. It's not aware. and it doesn't fact check what it's saying. Although people are trying to fix this. They're saying, okay, let's take the stuff that the large language model generate, the text, and let's see if we can check it against the current information on the internet and do a fact-checking before we finally give the answer to the user. And that sort of thing is taking place. They're doing research in that area. I haven't heard of any great successes, but that's certainly an approach that they're trying to use to solve some of the problems. It's trained on large amounts of data, millions of sentences, millions of images, etc. It needs that much data because it has to fine-tune all those billions of parameters on all those billions of links, and it needs voluminous quantities of data and information, text, books, newspaper articles, anything they can get their hands on. They will feed into these large language models. And the training uses enormous computing power. If you have that many billions of parameters that you have to fine tune every time you give a new image to this thing when you're training it, you've got a lot of arithmetic to perform. And there's a computer processor called a graphic processing unit that can handle large volumes of arithmetic calculations, really large volumes. And that's what you need to do because of the probability equations that are used in the fine tuning of all these numbers on the links. And by the way, they take on the order of 2 to 3 months to train these large language models, the ones that are really big like that. And these graphical processing units, they cost on the order of $20,000 to $30,000 per graphical processing unit. And to train a very large language model, you'll need on the order of 1,000 of them. Thus, the amount of money that's needed to be invested in these companies to buy all these graphic processing units to train these large language models. And as a result, NVIDIA is being one of the big vendors and manufacturers. They don't actually manufacture these chips. They actually sell the chips. The company that manufactures these graphic process units is a company in Taiwan. I think it's called TSMC. They actually manufacture the chips for NVIDIA, and then NVIDIA sells them. So, of course, the price of their stock has been skyrocketing in 2020. I think it's gone even more this year as well. Fortunately, the prompting costs are coming down. So when you do prompting, you have to. It costs you some money if you want to do it on a regular basis. You can pay for ChatGPT. You can pay about $25 a month for a license to use ChatGPT, the latest version of ChatGPT, continuously during the month. There's another product called Llama, which is from Meta AI. It runs rather than running on a dedicated set of graphical processing units. It runs on the Amazon cloud. It's cloud-based. Amazon AWS, what's it stand for?
Web
Service, thank you. Yes, so Llama runs on the Amazon Web Service, and you pay on the order of maybe 15 cents per hour of usage. So those prices are coming down. One of the reasons they're coming down is there is competition in the large language model business, and we'll talk about that when we talk about open source versus a closed AI. The other problem is you can feed invalid facts in your prompt. So you can give it a whole pile of invalid information and then ask the question. It'll come up with the answer based on invalid information, and it believes you. It has no way of checking the information you feed it in the prompt, whether it's correct or not. So that's a problem. What about the ability to ask these things how to make a bomb? Or how am I going to figure out a way of murdering somebody? Well, to stop that from happening, the builders of these large language model products have been putting what's called guardrails on them. Basically, software before the large language models get a hold of your prompt, they will go through it and they'll filter out anything that's, invalid. They'll also look at the answers that the large language model produces. And if it has the word bomb in it or nuclear radiation or whatever it happens to be, they'll filter out those things as well. Those are called guardrails. Now, there's groups of people, they're called red teams, that actually try and break the guardrails of all new large language models that come out. That's the first thing they do. They see how fast they can do it. And usually it's within a day after the announcement of a new large language model, the new trained version, they will end up breaking it and having it say things that you wouldn't want a large language model to say. But guardrails generally are getting better. And then there's the general problem of narrow AI. These neural networks are in a tangled internal structure. They're not transparent, and you can't get an explanation out of them as to how they came up with their answer to a question. So those are bad things. The closed software versus open source software. This is an interesting thing going on in the generative AI industry right now. Closed software, for instance, ChatGPT from OpenAI, which is now an oxymoron, ChatGPT is closed. You don't know the algorithms. You don't know the sources of data that were fed into it for training. You don't know all the parameters and the weights that have been given to all of the links in the network. So it's in the hands of a few versus everyone. You don't know the sources of data, and it really isn't open. The other extreme is open source software, and there is in between levels of openness. But true open source large language models allow you to know the algorithm used, know the sources of data used, know all of the parameters that are in the network that have been built, and allow you to take a copy of it and run it on your own GPUs, if you can afford that many GPUs to run it efficiently. And some of the companies that are doing this, of course, is the Llama 3 from Meta, Mixtral from Mistral, they're a French company, Abacus AI from China. They're open source AI, large language model or generative AI software, and they are now starting to produce software that is good as the closed source AI software. And I came across one just yesterday or the day before. It's based in China. I'm trying to think of what the name of it was. I can't remember the name. QWEN, Quen, supposedly has beat all sorts of benchmarks measuring its ability to give good answers and answer questions, as good as or better than many of these closed source AI software. So this is going to whittle away at the success and the profits of all these companies that have closed source generative AI software. So you can see the competition here, and that's going to just drive prices down. It won't necessarily drive the prices of GPUs down, but it's certainly going to reduce the prices that we have to pay as a user. And as a result, these companies that have paid billions of dollars to train their AI products, they're going to be not profitable. And because of that questionable return on investment, you're getting the slowdown in venture capital being invested in companies doing generative AI software. So it's coming. But there's two other serious problems that are bad. And one is called hallucination. This is where the generative AI product actually generates false information. Okay. It sounds authoritative because it's very readable. It's a serious problem, certainly for applications like legal advice or health advice or facts about people. This is where it really is a problem. Let's have a look at it. This is a text example out of ChatGPT. How many countries begin with the letter Y? As of my last knowledge update in January 2022, there are three countries whose names start with the letter Y. These countries are Yemen, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Please note that political changes can occur and the number of countries in the world can change over time, so it's good practice to verify this information with up-to-date sources for the most current and accurate counters. Typical sentence that ChatGPT will put at the end to try and say, yeah, well, I'm not perfect. There's a textual hallucination. This is an image hallucination. You give it this picture of a clock and you say, what time is shown on the clock? And it says, oh, the clock shows 7 minutes past 10. Well, of course, as soon as the OpenAI finds these sorts of examples, they start to get more guardrails or enhance their front end or back end of the tools. What about image hallucination? Look at that beautiful picture. Absolutely perfect. Blurred in the background, crisp, clear, lovely to watch at. But that's not the entire picture. Let's look at the rest of it. Look, Ma, no hands. Yeah, so this is image hallucination. Here's another one. A prompt was old wise man hugging a unicorn, soft light, warm and golden tones, tenderness, gentleness in the style of Michelangelo's. Something went wrong. They were not too sure how long the right arm is of this gentleman. He seems to be going right through the body of the horse. And if you don't train these image generative AI products on the right images, it can't ask the question. So here are some images of a person writing with their left hand. It's been asked to generate an image of someone writing with their left hand. Well, it's never been trained on left-handed people writing, so it can't even generate it. Here's an interesting one as well. Create a picture of an empty room with no elephant in it. Absolutely no elephant anywhere in the room. And this is the sort of hallucinations and mistakes it makes. It also occurs in videos. This is a video produced by Sora from OpenAI. And I want you to count the wolf cubs in this image when I play this video. Count them. I think you got the message. No understanding of reality, and therefore can't really generate reality. The other serious problem, though, is plagiarism. Plagiarism is caused because these companies like OpenAI started taking all the information out of the New York Times and books and many sources of information where they had no right to take that information and feed it into their large language models. So it's copyright infringement. There's a lawsuit underway now between New York Times and OpenAI. It hasn't reached trial yet, so we don't know the answer from a trial judge. But what has resulted in is that AI companies now are starting out to get licenses with media sources so that they don't run into this problem again. So that's plagiarism, and it can occur visually as well. Here's Google's Gemini. You can't ask it to give you a picture of a minion, but if you ask it to draw you a yellow 3D cartoon character with goggles, it'll generate a minion, and of course that's plagiarism as well, just image plagiarism. What about the ugly? All right, ugly. Yes, it can get ugly. Fake news, fake people. Yeah, polluting the internet and the media with all this fake information. A survey done by the World Economic Forum on global risks in 2024. Top five risks most likely to present a material crisis on a global scale in 2024. Number two, AI-generated misinformation and disinformation. Some of you might have been familiar with the Taylor Swift thing that happened this year. Someone generated some fake information and videos or pictures of Taylor Swift fans wearing T-shirts. And on the T-shirts was, you know, Taylor Swift, we support Trump. Well, of course, after a few days of that, Taylor Swift had to speak up and say, no, those were all fake. And I actually support Biden. So, you know, it forced her to speak up. And these sorts of things are happening all the time and getting worse and worse. The problem is that the fake media is spreading this because it's sensational. And, you know, it's spread on the Facebook and all the other internet medias. There's about 60 elections happening around this world. And some deep fakes, lots of deep fakes are occurring. There's a deep fake defense called the liar's dividend. So if a politician, let's say, makes a statement and it's actually a lie and then is called out in public and the press get on and say, hey, that's not true. The politician say, oh, well, it was actually fake. It was a deep fake. It's called the liar's dividend. But what's happening is Google, OpenAI, all these big companies, they're trying to come up with techniques for labeling AI images with a digital watermark or text with some sort of watermark so that people can identify stuff that's been generated versus what's real, generated by people. So, and blocking state-sponsored groups is another thing they're trying to do as well. It gets real ugly when you start, criminals start using it for scams and improving their phishing emails and things like that, or manipulating the stock market with fake news about companies, or even, I think the ugliest is the military side of things, where AI is starting to be used for drones and making these drones autonomous to make decisions without human in the loop. That's real scary if the human's not in the loop. Same with creating new bioweapons. But what about jobs? Yeah, well, some people say the whole problem with unemployment caused by machines being able to do these jobs, that's going to be a serious, serious, ugly problem. Well, yeah, ultimately, people who know how to use AI will tend to replace people who don't know how to use AI. That will be natural. They'll be able to do the job better. But AI shouldn't be by itself autonomous. It really have to have people in the loop. And AI is best used as an assistant. And believe it or not, younger people are adopting AI tools like ChatGPT, et cetera, much faster than the older generations. It's actually some statistics out of India showing that 73% of people in India have tried ChatGPT. India tends to have a younger population. It's not as high as that in other countries. So, but how soon, at what rate that will happen, hard to tell. It'll be a slow progress as these tools get better, people start using them more. But there's always the question, will it be economically viable for the companies that are producing these products? Will they be able to charge enough money to pay for their billions of dollars in investment? So there's big question marks in those areas. So it's even uglier, but these things are far less likely. Some people think that large language models can generate, well, because they can generate software, they're going to rewrite their own software, they're going to escape from their built-in purpose, and they're going to take off and do things that we didn't want them to do in the first place. But how can software have escape its purpose when it only is designed to do what it's designed to do? It can't. It's not logical that it can escape its built-in purpose. Okay, and why would it? It'd have to have some other purpose to escape from its built-in purpose. And then there's the big sensational thing about eliminating humans, the existential risk, as it's called. Very sensationalistic claims. But why would it ever happen? Well, you'd need a really bad actor who would take AI, put it in robots, just like the Terminator movie, and, start killing everybody. But those robots would kill the creators as well, the ones that programmed them or gave them purpose. That is probably the most sensationalist and the least likely thing to happen. But, all things are possible. Never say never. So there's some ugly things. Is there any progress in trying to solve these things? Well, generative AI is mostly experimental. It's evolving. There's problems being addressed. It's slowly being adopted by industry and in products. People are questioning how profitable it's going to be, and they're worried about hallucinations. So the adoption rate of AI, generative AI in products is very slow, although you've got companies like Microsoft who come out with their Copilot, and you've got other products out there, but they have problems, and of course they're working on solving those problems. They're really trying to beat each other at the punch and come out, they take a beta version of their software and they release it as a final version. It's not. It hasn't been fully tested, that's the thing. Another thing that's happening is, of course, embedding all this large language model stuff into your phone. So they call small language models. A lot of work has been taking place on developing small language models that are specialized in a particular subject. So a law firm who can afford it might build a small language model all to do with, civil cases, because they are a civil law firm. And use that then as a sort of an intelligent source of information. But to try and get these things to run on a smartphone is challenging. You've probably heard about Apple's latest iPhone. I think it's called 16, iPhone 16. It's got some special hardware in it for handling AI. That's how they're advertising it. Other approaches to solve these problems of safety and security. Take it slower. Well, that was suggested, but there's no big company that's going to do that. They're in competition, so it's very difficult to try and do that. But regulation, lots of countries and states trying to do this. There's a list of some. EU is building up an AI Act to control the development of artificial intelligence in the EU. California had one coming along very well until the governor vetoed it. But there's a number of other things like the White House AI rules, et cetera. What else could be done? Well, enforcing mandatory testing and validation of AI products before they come out on the market. That would be an excellent approach. Ideally, you could regulate that. And the whole area of education, if we can only educate everyone who uses it, it's going to be much better understanding of how to use it and when it's going to be useful and when it goes wrong, etc. So education in general. Okay, I'm going to finish off with robots because robots is really what's going to be the next wave in AI. So breaking news, the AI robot apocalypse has begun. Took that out of the Citizen newspaper just a few days ago. Robot applications, we've had lots of robot applications that have used AI. There's Mars rovers, there's vacuum cleaners, the Rumba, there's self-driving vehicles, lots of those. Rescue robots, industrial robots in factories, warehouse robots. Did you know that Amazon is really a robot company? They use lots of different robot tech, all sorts of different kinds of robots in their warehouses. They are one of the most advanced robot, when it comes to applying robots in an industry, they are one of the most advanced. But it's humanoid robots that tend to gather the news nowadays. There's an example of some of them. Tesla's robots in there. Boston Dynamics robots on that list. Boston Dynamics have had humanoid robots around for a good 10 years now. They're really advanced in it. Excellent locomotion and acrobatics. Not the best hand dexterity, although I've seen some work they've been doing on hand dexterity on their Atlas robot. It recognizes objects. It doesn't talk, doesn't listen. But it basically combines many pre-trained tasks into sequences of tasks. So it looks like it can do some intelligent things. And this is about a minute long example of the Atlas robot. This Atlas robot is based on hydraulics. It's got an engine and a pump, so it pumps hydraulic to make its limbs move. The latest version of the Atlas robot is actually electronic rather than hydraulic. But you can see it's been trained to do each one of these steps. And it's sort of, you maybe not notice it hesitate, but it knows how to do that. It knows how to pick up, then knows how to turn around. And they've basically combined all these different tasks into a combination of tasks. Watch its head. Whoa, close. There it goes, doing great stuff. And it finishes off with a nice little twist and turn and jump. There it goes. You have any idea how many times they had to practice that sequence before they finally got it right? Of course, they wouldn't publish all of the failures, but I have seen some videos of some of the failures. They're quite dramatic. They probably had to do that 20, 30 times before they got the whole sequence continuously working. It's a challenge when it comes to humanoid robots to get them to do anything really intelligent. There's a whole pile of companies working on robots, humanoid robots. We've got our own Canadian company out in Vancouver. It's called Sanctuary AI, fifth from the bottom. Their robot's called the Phoenix. They're working on it. Another one that's been in publicity recently was the Figure AI, Figure 01. They've been showing it being worked in a factory, moving stuff around. There's quite a few Chinese ones as well. But robots are great specialists, but very poor generalists. They need to be trained for each task. Small changes to a task require retraining, and they suffer from the long tail problem. Self-driving car technology, self-driving vehicle technology suffers from this problem as well. There are low frequently occurring and low probability occurring events. It's called the long tail. You can train these robots on the most frequently occurring things that have high probability of occurring. But there's things that can occur only once every year or once every month or very improbable, very low frequency. They haven't been trained on them, and that's the places where they fail. I've been talking to a guy that actually works for a company that does pick and place. You know, grocery items come down a conveyor belt, and the robot picks them up and puts them into different bins. Their challenge is not to pick up and place the standard stuff, a box of cookies. It's picking up and placing something like that's made up of cloth because it's not the grabbers, you know, and the orientation of the item, the barcode on the item not being shown, etc., and not being able to fully recognize an object. These are all the less frequently occurring things that are the most challenging when it comes to building these kinds of AI tools and AI robots. So humanoid robots, fantastic mechanical and electrical engineering, very costly to build. I think the cheapest one you could buy would be about $20,000 right now. They're missing common sense, reasoning, and understanding. They're not general purpose AI software. You might ask, are humanoid robots the right solution? Some people suggest no. Maybe we should just be using wheels. Why use legs? The Rumba vacuum cleaner did just fine. It used wheels, didn't need to have legs. The next point is that dexterity alone is not an indication of intelligence, just like language was not an indication of intelligence. It needs a lot more to be something to be intelligent. What is true intelligence then? Well, it's ability to adapt one's behavior in the real world, not in a human-generated textual world or image world or video world. It's the real world. And it's the ability to adapt, continuously adapt one's behavior, continuously learn. Multi-sensory perception and recognition, ideally thinking, reasoning, problem-solving, planning, decision-making, really understanding and have a common sense understanding of how the world operates. And ideally self-awareness or maybe even consciousness, if we could define consciousness, and that hasn't been well-defined. So where does the future lie? Well, all these technologies go through a cycle. This is maybe an exaggerated cycle, but this particular diagram that I picked up in July last year, they said generative AI was there at the peak. Coming up on the left-hand side, artificial general intelligence, they have smart robots right behind generative AI. All of these things, just like weed, you know, grass. What's the word? All the stock market hype about these companies that were growing
marijuana.
That's a word I'm looking for. Thank you. You know, at my age, I suffer with some of these words sometimes. Too many words. Marijuana. It goes through a cycle. All of these things go through a cycle, and generative AI pretty well is at the top of the cycle. I would expect over the next 3 or 4 years you'll start to see it fading somewhat because it really doesn't understand what it's talking about. It doesn't have thinking or reasoning capability. So in summary, we're getting close to the end here. You see up to slide 87 of 91. AI is better at processing data, at memorizing things, at self-control, following instructions, and tedious repetitive tasks. Whereas humans are better at understanding the world, comprehending scenes, inferring meaning from language, being cognitively flexible, you know, really being aware of things, thinking, reasoning, and problem-solving, and navigating the 3D world. So before I go through that slide, though, I want to read you a quote from Jan LeCun at Meta. He was one of those many guys that I had on the list at the start. He says, one thing we know is that if future AI systems are built on the same blueprint as current auto-regressive large language models, they may become highly knowledgeable, but they will still be dumb. They will still hallucinate. They will still be difficult to control, and they will still merely regurgitate stuff they've been trained on. But more importantly, they will still be unable to reason, unable to invent new things, or to plan actions to fulfill objectives. And unless they can be trained with video, they still won't understand the physical world. Future systems will have to use a different architecture capable of understanding the world, capable of reasoning, and capable of planning so as to satisfy a set of objectives and guardrails. So that was a quote from him. So now you have to decide. Are you an optimist? Do you think there's enough good in AI? Lots of great applications for AI technology, major benefits to humanity. Is that really what's going to happen in the future? Is that you an optimist? Maybe you're a realist. Maybe you say, okay, yeah, there's a lot of good, but let's be realistic. There's a lot of problems as well. But we're working on those problems. We'll get them fixed up. Not quite yet, but we're working on them. So yeah, they may be bad, but we'll solve them, and we'll get more into the good. Or are you more of a believer in the ugly? Are you a pessimist? You know, it could be misused by bad actors. Like all technology, it tends to start out being abused. It's like atomic energy, for instance, but then eventually it gets guardrails and et cetera, and they perfect it, and we still have problems, and hopefully it'll end up being, in the long term, the good. I'm more of a realist at this point, that's where I am at. You have to decide where you're at on this. I can't tell you where you should be. The question is AI technology the real problem? Maybe it depends on who, why, and how. So I'll leave you there with some questions and discussion.
Wow. That was an amazing presentation, Brett. Thank you so kindly on that. We do have quite a few questions, so let's plow into them. We have one from Alan. Are small language models, e.g. specific to Python programming, derived from a general LLM, or do they have to be trained on just Python-related data?
No. You might be confusing a little bit there. Python may be the programming language that the algorithm has been programmed in, but the data that they get fed could be from any source of text or images, etc. But you could program using this transformer technology, the technique. You could program that in any programming language, as long as you can feed it the data and you can have it regurgitate it somehow in text. So Python is irrelevant in the whole thing. But when it comes to small language models, because that's, I think, the essence of the question, small language models, they are language models using the transformer technique and technology, but they are programmed on a subset of the general purpose knowledge that you can get off the internet. They don't cover all the subjects. They may cover just the more popular subject. So they may be specialized to a particular subject area. The other possibility is they've been trained on a large subject matter, but they haven't got as many links. And because they haven't got as many links, they might not necessarily do such a good job as coming up with answers.
Right.
So it depends on the nature of the smallness. Is it the smallness of the data being used, or is it the smallness of the size of the network? And usually they are small networks. They're not the 20 to 50 billion parameters or links.
All right.
Hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, I suspect, knowing Alan, that probably is answering it for sure.
Okay.
Karen has a question, and I'm going to tack on an extension to it. She says, who's funding all this work and research? And she asks also what sites or people that you actually follow or consult with to stay current on AI. And I would extend on that a little bit. You talked a little bit about smart city projects. Are there any smart city projects in Canada that are going on? And are these billion-dollar projects that cities can't afford? We just had a tentative budget come out from the City of Ottawa where we're going to have substantial tax increases. Can cities afford to do these projects?
That's not one question. That's three or four. Starting with the first one that I remember, who's funding it all?
Yeah.
A lot of funding coming from the big companies that are making lots of money, a lot of technology, big technology companies. But there's a lot of venture capital companies, certainly US-based, that have raised lots of venture capital money, and then they're feeding it into these companies as well.
Right.
Now, would you like to keep working on that question? Give me the next part of that question.
Yeah, sorry. What sites and people do you follow to or consult with to stay current on the technology?
Okay. What do I follow? Right here, I get blogs from Ben's Bytes. Does a fairly good job of keeping track of what's going on in the AI industry. Ben's Bytes. The next one is fairly good. I do Bob May's Investing in AI because I'm interested in money invested in AI. He's quite good. He doesn't blog too often. I also do The Sequence. The Sequence does a pretty good job of what's going on. There's the latest one, The Sequence Chat, small specialized versus large generalist models, and what if NVIDIA becomes a Sun Microsystems. That's a daily blog, The Sequence. And there's a number of other ones. I'm just trying to think. Turing Post is one that comes up with quite a bit of stuff. There's a latest post on what is metacognitive AI. It's a bit more technical, that one. The Gradient is another one that I get. There we are. There's one on the our future with voice agents. So voice recognition, voice generation. So that's called The Gradient, TED Talk Substack. Status, Slack, robotics. So those are some of the ones that I do. Of course, I do cognitive science and neuroscience, because that feeds the, it gives me the requirements for building AI software. So I do a lot of stuff in that area.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So that gives you an idea.
Yeah, it also gives, if people want to follow along with this on their own, it gives them a few starting points that they can be looking towards. Karen also asks, what about the energy consumption? We hear stories about the massive energy consumption by the LLMs. Do you want to speak to that at all?
Sure. You remember those graphic processing units?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you've got 1,000 of those graphic processing units that cost $20,000 to $30,000 a piece, and they're crunching numbers, they're basically tremendous computers. Each one is a computer, and they're running continuously for 2 months to create a large language model. You're using a lot of electricity, but they're also using a lot of electricity in the prompts, because you have to take the book of information that goes in the prompt plus the question, and you have to compare all of that with the information in the large language model. That's taking up a whole pile of processing time as well. So if people are putting in a prompt, the average person puts one prompt in every half hour, and there are 100,000 people doing this simultaneously, imagine how much processing power is being eaten up answering all those questions by large language. So there's a lot of electricity being used, and companies like Microsoft are starting to invest in nuclear energy. For electrical generation.
Wow.
that's starting to be a trend.
Yeah. Okay. Alan asks, and I think I might know what your answer might be on this one. How long before AI becomes reliably autonomous?
trustworthy. Trustworthy, reliable. As trustworthy, as reliable as people. Maybe 15 years.
Oh, really? I'm surprised that it's so soon.
Yeah, no, I suspect it's coming. More trustworthy and more reliable than people. They often call it artificial superintelligence. Another 10 years after that. So something like that. It's certainly not in five. It's not in 5 years. It's not in 7 years. You know, 15, maybe 20.
Okay.
That's my estimate anyway. It's, you know, I'm just one of many voices in this, and I can't predict the future any better than anybody else.
Yeah, but you have a background of other people's thoughts on that for sure, on a wide range. So,
And I've been trying to do it for 50 years as well.
Right. Yeah. Stu had a comment more than anything else. He said AI will never make a good home brew. I bet he's actually wrong on that, but who knows?
Who knows? The next thing will be an AI bartender, right?
Yeah.
Mix the drinks or whatever. Yeah.
Karen asks if you have any thoughts on Elon Musk's Grok.
Elon Musk's Grok. Oh, I've heard of that. What is Grok?
It is an AI type thing, like a ChatGPT type thing. But I think I've read very, very little on it. But what I have is very irreverent, and
I've heard of it, but I haven't studied it in any detail, so I can't answer you, unfortunately.
Okay. Let's see. What else do we have? If I missed anything from anybody, pipe in again. Going back to the multi-part question that I had, do you have any thoughts on the smart city projects? Is there any city in Canada that is really embarking on that? And really, can we afford it? Because my understanding would be that's a pretty expensive undertaking, and most politicians are looking pretty short-sighted on things.
Yeah, there's research going on in this subject area here in Ottawa. I know that there is a test track with streets and, you know, lights and intersections, etc., out in Kanata, that is being used by AI companies for self-driving cars. So there's some research going on in that area. There's no company that I know of that actually does produce a product in that area.
Okay.
So just research at this point, and I don't know where the funding's coming from that.
Yeah. Okay. Alan had a question. What do you think about chatbots that provide references for their answers versus those that do not provide references for their answers?
One of the first questions I asked ChatGPT was a question about a subject and asking for some references. Well, one of the references was perfect. It actually matched with something that was real. But the second reference was made up and it was hallucinated. The names in the authors were invalid. One of them was not even a I couldn't find the person on the internet. The name of the paper was invalid, and it was in a different. It was in a magazine or a journal that was not didn't make sense based on the subject that was in the title of the article. So, it hallucinated one of the references.
Wow.
In other words, don't trust these things when you're asking for references. Have you heard the story about the lawyer in the New York back about a year and a half ago that was putting some case studies together for making a legal argument in court? And I think seven of his cases that he had put in this argument he had generated over the internet, and they were false. Three of them were valid. Some, and the judge figured that seven of them were totally false and made up, and he told the lawyer, never come back in this court again. This sort of thing was taking place.
You had mentioned early on in your presentation that the designers and the programmers of these LLMs and I guess in the training of them, they don't fundamentally understand what is truly going on within their models. And to me, that sounds pretty scary. Do you have any comments to how we get out of that?
You cannot continue to use artificial neural networks with weights on links based on probabilities.
Okay.
As long as you keep doing that, the structure will be what's called entangled, and you cannot explain what it comes up with the answer. You have to start using what's called symbolic AI. Symbolic structures where you can actually say this is the reasoning it went through to come up with the answer.
Right. Okay, that makes sense, that to me was always a very scary thought for sure.
Yeah. Well, there are such things as symbolic neural networks. That's what I work with.
So okay.
They are coming.
Interesting. The question from Stu, is the energy consumption from these large language models and so forth comparable to crypto mining?
Not there yet.
Okay.
Of course, Ethereum doesn't use so much energy anymore. I think Bitcoin still does because of its work state has something of work rather than something of state. But use a different algorithm. But cryptocurrency mining takes a lot more electricity.
Yeah.
But, of course, given the number of years from now, maybe the generative AI technology we'll be using is just as much electricity as cryptocurrency mining.
Yeah, I seem to recall Ethereum, when they changed their way of doing things, the electricity demands dropped by something like 92% or something like that.
Exactly. I'm trying to think of the terminology. It's something based on work rather than based on state.
Okay.
And
it's
proof of work and proof of stake, STAKE.
Okay.
Proof of work uses a lot of processing power. Proof of stake, which is Ethereum's algorithm now, doesn't use as much as electricity.
Okay, I think we're just coming up on the witching hour, so if anybody has any other things, by all means, pop it in. We'll see if we can cover it off. But I'm seeing in the chat lots and lots and lots of thanks and excellent presentation, and everybody seems to have really gotten a lot of your talk, and I'd like to echo that. I do really, really appreciate you taking the time to come out and talk with us today. That was fantastic. For the people on the call, Brett has agreed that we can put up a PDF of his presentation onto our website. So expect that within a couple of days that we will have it on our website, and you can download it if you want to review it at your leisure. So with that, I guess I will call the meeting to an end. I don't see any additional questions coming in. So thanks again, Brett. It was a great presentation, and anytime you want to come back and talk to us about AI, I'm sure it's constantly changing and evolving and everything else. So wonderful presentation. Thank you on behalf of all our users.
You're welcome. Thanks for the good questions.
Great.
And visit my website if you're really interested in what I'm doing.
There you go. Okay. Thanks again. Good night, all. And everybody, we'll see you next Wednesday at Q&A session.